basically, those of us who are teachers sort of spend a lot of time teaching students. And if we look at what the term teaching really means, it's all about facilitating learning. There's not necessarily a direct correlation between teaching and learning. When we teach people, our aim is to try and facilitate learning. And most of you will recognize that all the learners take away different messages from the teaching that they're involved with. Now, the important thing for me is that learning involves a change of state. So as far as I'm concerned, learning is more than simply acquiring knowledge. Now, people might argue with that, but when you think about university learning, we want our students to be able to do more than simply regurgitate facts. So the important part of university learning is that it involves conceptual change. And as I said previously, not all teaching leads to learning, because many of the forms of teaching that we see being used in universities and in schools and in TAFE institutions, that the forms of teaching are very good at presenting information but not necessarily leading to the conceptual change. So the idea of, in my mind, of effective teaching is teaching that deliberately and successfully brings about learning. And in fact, the process of teaching that does this is what Peter Goodyear often refers to as teaching as design. It's part of a design process that happens when the teacher is in the delivery. Good morning, everybody. It's Ron Oliver here. I'm sorry I can't be with you all in Sydney today, but I'm home at Perth with you in spirit. As you can probably discover from the technology, I've pre-recorded this presentation, so although I'm sitting in Perth ready to engage in some conversation at the end, I'm doing my thinking ahead of the presentation, so hopefully it won't be too evident in what I've got to say. The talk that I'm going to give this morning is about learning designs and how I feel that they're very important for helping to teachers to think about learning. And as I go through the presentation, I hope you will see the message that I'm trying to put activity. Now, I'm always trying to discover different ways to think about things, and I love to use analogies. And I was thinking the other day that maybe the learning journey is very much a trip, could be very much a good analogy for what learning is all about. So let's see how good my analogy is. Imagine we are going on an overseas trip. Now, typically, trips start at a point A and end at a point B. And that's very much like learning, because generally with learning, we take students from some known state to a predetermined end state. Now, again, an overseas trip might involve a purpose. People might be going on the trip to learn something about history, geography, culture. So there's a purpose in the travel. Now, there are many different ways to take a journey. For example, we can go on a guided coach tour from our point A to point B. We can self-drive from our point A to point B. We can buy a train pass and use trains to go from the starting point to the end point. Or perhaps the most efficient way often to get from A to B is to jump on an aeroplane and you blink and you're there. The reason why I'm using this as an analogy for learning is because when you think about teaching and learning, this is often what we do with our students. We take them from a pre-state to an end state. And many teachers don't think really about the journey along the way, but are more interested in perhaps getting to that end point. When you're going on an overseas trip, or when you're going on any type of journey, you can judge your success by how much you enjoy yourself while you're there. But really, the telling point is the residual outcomes. After you've got home, 3 months on, what you remember, what involved the conceptual change. And that's very much like our learning journey. So, is this an accurate analogy to be using? And I think it sort of works quite well, and it perhaps helps us to think a bit about what learning is about and how we can facilitate it through our teaching processes. Curriculum takes students from A to B. We know what endpoint we are seeking. There are always multiple paths, learning paths. Now, when we look at the students in this learning journey, what we have to recognise is that often students come to our classes very much as tourists come to tours, tour guides. The students are happy to be guided by the teacher, they wait for the teacher to provide the guidance, and they learn from the experience. And when you think about journeys that you've taken, in instances where you have had a good guide. So you've been at your conference and you've probably been talking a lot about learning design. So perhaps if we just, you know, agree on some common terms here, I consider learning designs to be the blueprints of learning activities. They are the plans that we use when we want to engage the students. Principally, what they describe are the learner activities or the learner actions, not what the teacher will be doing, but what the learners will be doing, because that's the important part about determining what learning will be achieved. What we see in a learning design is often the strategies that the teachers will use to enable the students to engage in particular ways. So it's all about learner engagement, how we turn their minds on, how we cause them to think, reflect, and work to bring about the conceptual change that we are seeking. Learning designs need to be undertaken, planned, and prepared with the intended outcomes in mind, because it's a bit like the travel that we're talking about. It's not a lot of point taking people from A to C when, in fact, the original intention was to end up at B. So when we use learning designs, we need to make sure that we align them to the outcomes we are seeking. And very much like a good travel itinerary, I believe that learning designs have another really important component, and that is that they are shareable and reusable. Learning designs that work should be used over and over again, and we should be able to share them among ourselves. So what works for one person should, in many respects, be able to work for another person. And that's one of the reasons why I think the more work we do with learning designs, the more impact we might be able to have on learning and teaching. So with that in mind, it's interesting to think about why we are interested in them. And as I mentioned at the start, one of the reasons why I am interested in learning designs is because I think it helps teachers focus on what's important in learning. The idea of a learning design enables us to deconstruct what teachers do and enables us to focus on the important. So to me, learning designs are the planned learning events that teachers generate when they are thinking about trying to move students from A to B. To organise a learning design, you need to know the outcomes you are seeking. And often these are written quite prescriptively in our learning units and our learning plans. A learning design is all about creating opportunities to engage the learners' minds. Engaging their minds is what helps them to bring about the learning that we're seeking. But interestingly, every learner is different. So no matter what type of learning design we develop, we have to recognise that almost every learner in the group will undertake the learning in a different way, end up with different outcomes. Somehow we have to be able to mediate that in the approach that we're using. So in order to make sure that the learning is occurring in the way that we intend, we of course make sure that we assess the learning along the way, both formatively. Formatively gives us a chance to make amends if we're finding we're not going in the right direction, shows weaknesses and gaps, and summatively at the end tells us what the student has learned at the end of the journey, and perhaps gives us a sense of perhaps ways we might do it better next time. There's a discipline of knowledge around called systems thinking, and systems thinking works on the premise that in places where you've got organised entities and the activity, the system is dependent on a whole pile of variables, it's really important to think of the interrelation between the variables. It seems to me that learning is very much about a system, and we can use some of the concepts and some of the principles that come of this body of knowledge perhaps to give ourselves some hints as to what might be the best ways to develop and inform learning. Now, that particular project probably lasted for about 18 months, and we came up with a number of interesting outcomes. The database in itself wasn't the principal product that we were seeking to develop. It was a means to an end. The end that we were seeking was to discover the degree to which our learning design might be able to represent. So at that particular point, I think my time is up. I think it's probably a good point to stop and to see if there are any questions or queries people might have from me. Thank you. So I thought what I might do this morning is talk to you a little bit about some of the projects I've been involved in recently, which have learning designs at their core, and to just dwell on some of the findings that have come from them and leave you with a few thoughts. I've just recently finished working on my Carrick Fellowship, which was looking at factors which influence the sharing and reuse of technology-supported learning designs. One of the reasons I undertook this fellowship was because previously, with a number of my colleagues at the University of Wollongong, we developed a website where we provided a raft of information and a raft of resources that we thought would help people looking to improve their teaching be able to find learning designs that they might be able to use. So you will be familiar with the Australian Universities Teaching Commission website on learning designs at the University of Wollongong. It's got a raft of very, very good quality learning designs which have been described in quite close detail, supported by a myriad of resources. And the aim of this website was to provide teachers in the country with access to what we hoped would be reusable learning designs if people were interested. Now, one of the things we discovered when we developed this site is that it's not sufficient to have these materials available to teachers if we want to change practice. There's just not that degree of interest among teachers to go through repositories and databases where there are a myriad of resources and let teachers be able to extract good purpose and good meaning from it. So what I wanted to do was to perhaps replicate some aspects of that original project, but to try and discover what were the sorts of things that influenced teachers' willingness to share good learning designs and teachers' ability to reuse those that others have found useful. So in my particular project, I was exploring things like what are the important things about learning designs that need to be demonstrated, that need to be articulated if we're going to accurately represent them. So what are the critical elements within learning designs? I wanted to see if there was a way of making these learning designs accessible. And some of the thinking I was using in this regard was looking at when people are looking for a new house to buy, they don't immediately go to floor plans. They don't immediately go to descriptions of houses. They start with a very broad set of objectives, you know, what price am I prepared to pay? Where do I want to live? And they use these forms of filters to narrow in on the sort of house that might suit their needs. It seemed to me that if we were going to get learning designs accessible to teachers and relevant to teachers, maybe we needed to think along those lines as well. What would be the sorts of ways to enable teachers to go looking for learning designs that might filter them relatively quickly into a small number of perhaps opportunistic designs that they might be wanting to use? So my project was about trying to re-describe learning designs that people out there were using with a technology focus in ways that might have an efficiency of description, in ways that might minimalise the amount of information but leave sufficient for teachers who wanted to find some new ideas and have the capacity to reuse them. And to that end, we developed a database, and I'm showing you now some screen slides from it. It's an open database, and you have the URL, so you can refer to it if you're interested. The database basically looked at describing a range of activities, keywords that would describe a learning activity. And then within that, we then went and created a system whereby people could use descriptive terms. And again, a lot of thought went into what sorts of fields did we need to include so that the learning design would be able to be described accurately and efficiently. We didn't want to have large amounts of text. We wanted to be able to describe the learning design to a layperson quickly and efficiently so they could judge for themselves the quality of the learning that might come from it. So the project had a lot of fun talking with teachers, looking at what might be some of the keywords. And if you have time to look into the site, you can judge for yourself whether you feel as though we were able to describe the learning design with the fields that we chose. Basically, we chose about half a dozen fields, and the intention was to provide a brief description initially, to look at the student role, to look at the teacher role, and then to go through and try and describe what the tasks associated with that learning design might be, what types of learning supports need to be provided, and the sorts of resources that go with it. As part of the process, we looked at a lot of other things that might assist in reuse and sharing. And a number of the people early on in the project suggested to us that the Amazon situation where you can find a book, and if you like the book, write a review, seemed to be something that people thought might be a very strong feature for a database of learning designs. So the ability for teachers to come in and to rate and leave some feedback about what might be the best learning designs that were there. Anyway, if you're interested, I would encourage you to have a look at this particular database and see whether there's any activities that might interest you in there. The process for entering activities is really quite simple. Any teacher who wants to can hop in and have a look, and if you want to perhaps put your own entries in, this is the sharing part, then you simply need to register. You enter in the descriptions according to the fields that are there, and a moderator. So I guess thinking then about where this work is leading and what some of the future work might be, what I've discovered in our work is that it's really important when you're looking at things like learning designs to think about the big picture rather than small elements. As I look around the world at people working in learning designs, I worry sometimes that we might be focusing too much on some small part of it. Some people are very interested in representations of learning designs, and that's important. But to me, that's a necessary but not sufficient element. Even when we have the world's best representations, we might not find that we are able to get teachers to use these in mainstream ways, because some of the other things that we need to be thinking about may be missed. So in my role currently as a Pro Vice Chancellor at my university, I'm very much interested in trying to create opportunities and encouragement for our teachers to look at alternative ways for teaching. Somehow we have to engender teacher interest, and we have to be able to support the change. We have to get the teachers on side. We have to get them to be wanting to make the change before they will go and make use of the tools that we are providing. So I'm looking now very much at what are the factors that are rate limiting? What are the things that hold teachers back from using alternative forms of learning when we know that the current forms that they're using probably are not as efficient? So a lot of the work I think that we need to do now needs to try and discover how we can support our teachers. We can keep developing learning designs in repositories. We can keep developing the science of understanding how best to represent them. But from the work that I've done this year and the work with my colleagues, I sense that the really important work we need to do now is looking at how we can encourage and support and maintain our teachers so that they need and want to look at learning designs. And I guess looking at the LAMS community, there's some very good exemplars and models in that. I really like the way in the LAMS community, teachers are talking to themselves, teachers are sharing, and somehow it seems to me that these communities of practice that are evident there are perhaps some of the communities that we need to try and develop if we're going to make these things work in our own institutions. So I'm thinking about the need for champions, I'm thinking about the need for forms of support, and these need to be done at the very micro level. So it needs to be undertaken in ways so that teachers in the classroom are the people that are making the decisions to make the changes and are looking for the supports that we're able to provide. A lot of the work we're doing at the moment seems to be trying to provide an overarching framework at the top. And I guess many of you who are teachers would appreciate that what really matters is not what your administrators and what your bosses want you to do, but really what are the important things that you feel as a teacher, because they're the things that determine what you do on a daily basis and interests. Now, another activity that we've been doing in the area of reusable learning designs, which people might find interesting, is a project related to the development of online learning material project. And where it is at the moment is we're developing an online support tool, which we hope will give our instructional designers the capacity to look at a learning situation that they're trying to plan. In the first instance, they then try and work out which learning design type is most suited to their learning outcomes. And so you can see a whole pile of questions. The program asks learners a whole pile of questions about the process. And then at the bottom of the screen, you'll see how the teachers are in a position to design the learning activity. And we're calling it a learning object because we're crafting this into a structure so that at the end of the activity, the design activity, there will be an online resource which is very much a learning object. It takes people from A to B with all the supporting resources within it, and hopefully our online learning tool will provide teachers with the sufficient guidance to enable them to use learning design type 1, 2 or 3 in a very meaningful way. So that's a fascinating project, very much about particular learning designs and supporting teachers using them. So to give you an example, in terms of task guided, again, it's a little bit different. The example that here that I think is quite useful is one where students are training to be employment consultants. They're given clients to work with. They're given the need to develop an employment plan for the client. There's a process for doing that, but depending on how they apply their judgments, depending on how they plan to do that, students can come up with quite different outcomes. And so that's an example where the resources are put at the disposal of the student, the process is guided, but the students end up with quite different outcomes and results. And finally, the task autonomous, very much like a problem-based learning. In this instance, we're showing you a course in web design where the problem is crafted in